All right, we are back with another episode of the Work Week After Hours here with my good friend, Steve Cadigan. Steve, how you doing, buddy?
I am good, Shane. Happy New Year again. Is this our second one for the New Year?
I think it's our second, maybe third one, counting our live we did, which great, by the way.
Yeah. That was fun. Like I said at the end of that, I was really on the edge of my seat for that. And I like these because we can edit out when I, you know, fall asleep or the dog barks, but we can't do that on the live, man.
That's right. You got to be on. You are on and presenting to the world. So,
yep.
It's good. Yep. So, we got a lot of things in the news. We've had, we'll call it our first piece of fan mail, but our first piece of questioning mail that's come in that has aligned with us recording. So, for one of the few times we're kind of coming into this with a little pre-prep kind of coming into this. So, we had someone write in. They wrote in and had a question about essentially, I'm not sure what, there we go. Wanted to know, they said, there's a Wall Street article about TikTok stars. These TikTok stars made more money than many of America's top CEOs. So I'll give some stats so we have some numbers to go off of. Lady, I won't say her name, posting videos of herself dancing on TikTok in 2019 brought in $17.5 million. As a caveat, if I knew that I could make $17.5 million by posting myself dancing on TikTok, Steve, I love you, but you're also going to have to put up with me dancing on TikTok. According to Forbes, which recently ranked the highest earning TikTok stars of 2021, with 133 million followers on TikTok, she makes her money from a clothing line and promoting products in TikTok videos and other ads. By comparison, median pay for CEOs of S&P 500 companies was $13.4 million in 2020. So, the person writing in, I won't assume their position, but the wording in the email was maybe as if is the questioning, is this right or is it wrong? And they want, I think they just wanted us to kind of, as a hot take, kind of take this on. You and I discussed, it's kind of a good question that we can kind of dive into and then kind of segue into some other really interesting information that I've kind of teed up once we kind of dive into this.
Yeah, it is. And I think, carrying along the lines of other discussions we've had, I think the world of work is a better place where there's more platforms where you can build a viable, you know, income stream than working for somebody else. That is a good thing. We should all like that, you know, more choice, more opportunities. And all these platforms, whether it's SoundCloud, you're making music, whether it's, you know, LinkedIn Learning or Coursera, Udacity, you can do a course. Masterclass, you can, you know, get recurring revenue from that. Mm-hmm. I tend to, you know, this may be a little bit controversial, but I'm going to just, you know, my initial react, I am so happy that someone who is just doing something that other people find valuable and having fun is making a shit ton of money. I think that's awesome. That's great.
I'm with you.
I think it's an outlier, and I don't know if it's a tidal wave of change that's coming. But I bet if you were to ask any CEO, you know, put him or her in a dark room with a drink in their hand and say, would you rather be getting the money you're making dancing on social media or dealing with, you know, angry shareholders, having to let employees go, you know, dealing with COVID? What would you rather do to make your money? And I bet you they'd say, I'd rather be dancing.
Right? Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I'm going to flip. I'm with you, first of all, not because, I mean, you and I are certainly, I mean, we would be classified as being in the creator economy. We do a podcast. We do these things. What if we looked at the median income of people on TikTok that make money, that monetize their platform?
Right.
What if that number was $34,000 a year? Right. What if that was $34,000 a year? And if that was $34,000 a year, is that not a good thing? Does that not mean
the first question I would have is, well, how many people? What you know, how many people were talking making that money? If it's in the thousands, heck yeah, that's amazing. Well,
okay, so what if we did this? I think then we will have to revisit this. So this is this is where we've been. Maybe we should go see if we can find the data, or maybe someone listening can find it and send it to us. What's the top 500 earners on TikTok or social media? And then let's see what that median number is. Now, are those people? So there's a lot of ways this can go, right? Yeah. Just because those people don't have 85,000 employees doesn't mean they're not providing the same amount of value. I would
to 85,000 people or more.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So I would actually also argue that what if you had a two-person team that was doing $5 million? Collectively, those two people are doing well off, which means they're also, their families are now in better positions. What if you had a team of 10 people and one talent was making $5 million, right? Still collectively, they're probably being paid higher than normal or average wages, right? Mm-hmm. So when we talk about the pay gap in CEOs, does the person have that same opportunity who's 25,000 headcount away from the CEO as the person who's 15 that's making the same amount of money, right? And how much money has to be made for that person to make that money, mm-hmm. right? So there's a lot of different ways that this can be peeled back in an onion. I'm with you. Okay, let's go to Hollywood. There's been a lot of really bad movies. There's been more bad movies than have been made good movies. So why don't we criticize those people? Why don't we criticize Will Smith when he makes $100 million for a movie and it is one of the worst movies you've ever seen? Because nobody's perfect. We all have off days. We all take bad projects. We all, I don't want everybody ranking every job decision or career decision or, professional project I ever took on as my critique. But I think it goes back to how we romanticize how we've been told things have to be. And we've been told that, you should only be making millions of dollars creating content if you've been to Hollywood and you slept on couches and you worked hard and then you worked your way through the movie, you were a stand in. And then, now you've done this. Well, now I went to the movie and saw you. So you deserve that money because I went to the movie and paid $9 for a large popcorn and $12 for a large Coke.
Mm-hmm. Shane, did you see that story? And I may have all my facts wrong on this one. So one of the most viewed movies series this past year is one I saw, Squid Games. My kids saw it. I loved it. I'd never seen anything like it. It was partly gruesome, but somebody did a spinoff on that, and they were saying it wasn't through the traditional channels, but their spinoff earned them more than they believe the studio did that made the movie, sold it to Netflix, et cetera, et cetera. Is that true?
I sent you this link. Yes, when this happened, sent you this link. So this is a creator by the name of Mr. Beast. So Mr. Beast makes his money off of giving his friends and random people silly but safe, silly, wild challenges and gives away money. He'll drive down the street and get five people and say, hey, would you like to earn $1 million today? They'll say yes. And then they'll come and he'll have a square painted and said, the last one to leave the square gets $1 million. Right? Or he'll fill a pool full of cereal and milk and say, the last one to leave this giant pool of Cocoa Pebbles gets $1 million. And every episode, he gives this massive amount of money away.
Mm-hmm.
Or he'll get a house. I've seen him go to a homeless person and say, hey, and this guy he's helped out repeatedly and kind of helped mm-hmm. him level up his life and was like, hey, we bought you a house. We bought you an apartment. And he'll go mm-hmm. in and like, here, he's got his own bed and he's got this place. And he's like, here, it's yours. No, it's yours. Right. Or these different things. I've seen him go to a grocery store. I watch this because my kids watch it. Uh-huh. So he'll go. I've seen him go to a grocery store and tell the manager, we're here to buy everything in the grocery store. We're going to literally buy all the things on the shelf. And then he went and donated all that stuff to the local food pantry. And then people were in line when he got there, and he's going up and saying, do you need anything else? Because I'm paying for your order. And he goes through and all this stuff. So this is the gentleman you're talking about. So what he did is he recreated Squid Games for $456,000 and did his own version. He recreated there's a whole video on YouTube. You can look behind the scenes of what he did.
Uh-huh.
And he got 142 million views in 8 days,
mm-hmm.
right? Very few things that are ever created since the history of time get 142 million views in 8 days.
Mm-hmm.
So when we perceive, again, I think it's being romantic. We are romantic to what we think because of, again, we talk in relation to the future of work, it's time to break the mold. Right. It's time to break the mold of what we think. I think you and I actually had this conversation, and hope I'm not getting off track here, but you and I had this conversation of like managers need to all get in a room and create an individual list of the 10 things you said you would never do, and then bring it in and say, okay, what are all these things we said we'd never do? Cause we got to try anything now. Right.
Right. Right.
And that's, in a way, this goes back to how social media was adapted by, I'm not going to tell them your age, but people a little bit older than me, I'm mm-hmm. never getting on there. I'm not doing that Facebook stuff. That's for kids. There's still Fortune 500 companies that don't spend money on some of these platforms because they think it's just for kids, right? Mm-hmm. So they don't do that. But my wife's grandmother, who passed away this year, was 94, 95 years old. She was on Facebook, right? Everybody's on Facebook. Everybody who said they weren't going to be on Facebook is on Facebook, right? So so actually I had the stats wrong on the Mr. Beast. The people could win $456,000.
Okay.
He created it for 3.5 million, but then he got the views. There's no telling what he monetized out from that.
Many millions, wouldn't you say? Many.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it said his virality comes at a cost. His 25-minute video required a whopping $3.5 million to make, he said on mm-hmm. Twitter. For comparison, the 9-episode series cost Netflix a total of $21.4 million, averaging out about $2.4 million per hour-long installment. And it's wild to think that, and I actually have a theory, and it hits on this a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we devaluing someone based off of what they're willing to do? If someone's willing to pay, to me, that is the true form of entrepreneurship. Finding something someone is willing to repeatedly pay money for.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So mm-hmm. I just don't fall on the fence of it's a negative thing. I mm-hmm. also look at it and say, how many kids are realizing that they can make money off of doing these things and learn? Because when you become a creator and you make money, you start learning about things. You start mm-hmm. learning about marketing, you start learning about finances, you start learning about how to negotiate. Mm-hmm. There's way more of an education than we're giving it credit for, right?
Yeah, and let's expand that, because this is really, really interesting. My guess would be, and I've made a few dollars on TikTok, but you know, not that much. I don't have anywhere near the millions of views for posts, but it's been a really interesting learning experience. But what anyone who's a super uber influencer on TikTok right now is probably aware, there's a shelf life on this platform. And next year, the year after, everyone's coming after it, right? YouTube's trying to create a smaller version. Snapchat's trying to create a smaller version of it. You know, everyone is trying to get something like this. And Amazon even just is trying to woo new creators and influencers to their platform, right? So you know, if I'm a crusty CEO and I'm looking at these TikTokers who are making as much money as I am or more, I'm thinking, well, that train is going to come to a stop pretty soon. But here's the part that philosophy or that perspective, I think, is flawed. It's flawed because of what you just said, which is these TikTokers, it's not that they figured out TikTok, it's they've figured out something new. And their confidence to figure out the next thing that's new just went up times 1,000. And you, Mr. CEO, that are stuck in your industry, that you're stuck in your business, and you yourself probably don't think you can create the next,
correct,
you know, whatever the next platform is and be, you know, multi-millions without having to deal with lawyers and lawsuits and all kinds of regulatory compliance issues and a board of directors that's all up in your grill. No. And so that's the really interesting thing is the shelf life of some of these platforms. And yeah, it's no one's good. That person who, that woman who's made, you know, $17, $20 million probably is not going to make that every year on this TikTok platform. But there's a high probability her comfort level learning whatever else it is and having her followers follow her to other platforms and places is really, really going to benefit her and set her up for success. And that's the learning new stuff and gaining the confidence. I think that's the hidden real value here. It's not that money, you know, necessarily. It's the, I know the pathway to do it, whatever the next thing is, right? Yeah.
The greatest reward is, and it's also, here's the other piece. It's also allowing other young people to see there's alternative paths. And I would argue that YouTube creators and social media creators are influencing the largest portion of the future of work workforce than any university is going to in a normal non like doctor, like specific.
That's powerful. Job. I never thought about that, but I think you're 100% right. Yep.
So think about what we've talked about, right? Mm-hmm. You feel like in the next 5 to 10 years, people are going to hire people instead of having 80 to 90% of the skill sets that you have to have, mm-hmm. 40 to 50, maybe 55, 60, mm-hmm. right? It's a big gap. What does that mean? If I've learned and I understand and I know how to see trends and I know how to follow, like, again, I think we get caught up in these things because we don't actually understand what actually is going on. Your kids have mentioned to you about YouTubers and content creators. That gives them hope, not that they're going to go be the next, you know, Kim Kardashian. It's giving them hope to realize I can actually, like, I'll be honest. It gives them hope that they can go have fun doing something. Because if you ever watch this gentleman, Mr. Beast, it's pretty entertaining videos. And it's this wholesome family. It's hilarious.
Yep.
To watch. Here's another wild example. Do you know the number one earning YouTuber? Do you know who? Do you have any idea who? Even a guess?
No.
You want to guess how old he is? Take a guess.
I have no idea.
Take a guess.
I'm going to guess 27.
He's 10.
10.
He's 10. And he's been doing it for 5 years. He has 31.4 million subscribers to his YouTube channel. I think his last name is spelled Kaji. Ryan Kaji. K-A-J-I.
Okay.
His channel is called Ryan's World. He's been doing it for 5 years. In 2021, his estimated earnings are $30 million. And he's been doing this 5 years, making consistently this money. So much so that he reviews toys. His parents buy a toy. He does a video reacting to it as a young kid, started at 5 years old, so much so that he now has his own line of toys, I think in Target and also maybe in Walmart.
Oh my gosh.
Right?
Wow.
So in 2008, he was projected. So he was 5, 3 years ago. He was 7, made $22 million. So he had a balloon at every year at the Macy's Thanksgiving Parade for his. We're talking about a young man. Now imagine what we're creating here.
Yeah.
Okay. So the reason I say this, how many young people have seen that and thought they could go do it, didn't make the money, but they tried it and they figured out how to edit videos,
mm-hmm.
or they figured out how to do research to figure out how they're doing this. And they found how to go get the information that they need. They found out how to actually use the internet, how mm-hmm. it was originally designed to be mm-hmm. used. And right. that has processed into, I forgot how you reframe soft skills. What was the phrase you used?
Power
I can't remember
skills.
The power skills. So he's yes. developing power skills. He's created yeah. a whole army of people, a whole army of young people that are going to enter the workforce in the next 12, 13 years with power skills that mm-hmm. will surpass anyone 40 plus
mm-hmm.
because their learning velocity to understand it. I've thought about That's this it. A lot.
That's so true, Shane. And that, I mean, thank you for bringing this sort of full circle to sort of like, let's make sure everyone gets their highlighter markers out on this episode right now, because if you are, oh my God, this is so great. I've got a text from my son that I'm going to have to read as soon as we're through this point.
Okay.
He's like, he wants me to invest something in ETFs. This is just great. What, you know, if you are in the business of chasing the shiny object, you are going to be a follower, right? And you're not going to ever catch it. And, you know, what's a hot new skill? What should I learn? No. The thing is the learning ability to learn new things, learning velocity, which we've talked about, right? Which you so appropriately brought up to the front of the conversation here. That's the win here, right? And you think about it, we still as a society haven't adjusted to infinite visibility to how we can make money, make a living, make a life. Infinite. We used to have, when I grew up, we had 3 TV channels. Everyone had the same lunchbox. Your vision of what success looked like was really contained in that little box, you know, or you read a newspaper, or it was your finite circle of family, friends, and extended family. That's it. Now, oh my gosh, you have a window into the most obscure and the most diverse future possible, both good and bad, with which to sort of shape your view of what your path could be. And that, I find, is fundamentally challenging our children to sort of think, well, what's the right path? Well, there's a million right paths. Yeah, but what's my path? You know, and that's really, really hard. It's exciting. It's thrilling that we have all these choices, but we are still, I think, going through adjusting, digesting to this, you know, infinite domain of possibilities, which is really, really hard. And so, you know, sort of drawing this back to the sort of the stream of the conversation here, which we've gotten into, like, hey, there's a TikToker making more than CEOs. All right. I want to do a quick pause and a service announcement, sort of a seminar on CEO compensation, because it's really misunderstood. Most CEOs, again, this is overgeneralizing, you're going to have a base salary, you're going to have a bonus, and then you're going to have shares, a lot of shares of equity in your company. Now, the way that CEO pay is calculated is very, very random based on one big sort of unknown, sort of a hard to define dimension of that pay, which is when the CEO decides to sell their shares. And there's no requirement for when you sell the share. You could hold on to them forever and don't and gift them to your, you know, whoever you want in your estate. Or you can program a regular sell them. I think they call it a 10B sale plan. You can do lots of different things. But what happens when people are reading the news, oh my God, that guy made, you know, $300 million? Well, yeah, because it was a year when they sold a ton of shares. So it looks like they made a lot, but nobody in that boardroom says this year you're going to get 300 million shares. It was said your base pay is, I don't know, 500,000, 2 million. It's pretty low, but you're going to be paid on the upside, and it's up to you and your financial planner when you want to sell that. So that's why that median CEO pay, it's kind of a joke number. I mean, in absence of something better, okay, because if you sort of normalize the sale behavior of all the CEOs, you're going to get to something, right? But it's probably going to index to the S&P 500 or NASDAQ or whatever. It's not going to be too far. In an up year, you're going to see higher pay, and in a down, you're going to see lower pay, because of the selling behavior of the CEOs. You see what I'm saying? It's not so simple. And I don't think a lot of people understand that.
Yeah. I use a simple way to explain it to people when sometimes, even when I had when I had my last business, and you know, questions would come up about this person's making this, or not in our own company directly, but they, you know, in the startup community, you hear about everybody else's pay, and you know, you do that. And so I'm again pull from a number. There was an article published in 2020 that said the CEO to typical workers' compensation was 350 to 1. Now, most people will look at that number, and it's because it's a big number, and they would right? If somebody were to bring me that number, and again, I'm not taking the side of a CEO. I think there are definitely CEOs who are paid more than the value that they bring. Mm-hmm. But the first question I ask, having been a founder, is does the typical CEO founder have 351 times the responsibility that that typical worker has?
Right.
A lot of the times they do. Sometimes more than 351 times the responsibility that they have.
Yep.
If you've got shareholders, you got millions of people that you owe, you know, a responsibility to. So in that, it can never be put in a box and said, this is right, this is wrong. There are way too many variables. And it goes back to, we live in a world, I love people. So I'll give you an example. So to give the, if you're just now listening, I used to work in the automobile industry in the sales and finance side of this in my early years from 20 to 28. And people come in and say, well, you know, I can't believe they made this much money on me buying a car. And the first question is always, well, did anybody put a gun to your head? No, nobody put a gun to my head. Okay, so you signed the pay, like you got a deal. Yeah, I got a deal. I did this. I said, okay, let me ask you a question. How much is your house worth? Let's say it's worth $150,000. If someone pulls up in your driveway and says, hey, I'd like to buy this house from you. You say, well, you know, it's not for sale. And they look at you and tell you, you know what? I really love this house. I'll give you $400,000 for it right now. What would you do? And they'd say, well, I'd probably follow them to the bank. I said, okay, so everybody's value is perceived, you know, value, when value exceeds price by $1, people spend money into that, right? So somewhere a group of people said the value of this human being exceeds the price. That means we're paying them $50 million a year. The value that they're bringing is actually probably close to $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do it the other way around, and you know this even way better than I, what kind of a return on investment am I getting for this person generating revenue for me, right? There's revenue per FTE. We've talked about it. There is this thing. So while I understand, and I certainly believe there are instances where people are grossly overpaid, and yes, there are inequities and inequalities and all of these things that exist within that, we can't put it all together, and we can't compare corporate pay to content creator pay, because the value that they're bringing, how do we put a value on happiness? My kids love watching these videos and laugh their guts out when they watch these videos. I would argue this priceless. I don't have to pay anything for it.
Mm-hmm.
So because I'm not paying for it, is it the perception of there's no value there, right? Mm-hmm. You and I've talked about this, of people who do contracts for different things. If I just do the work on a shake and a hand take, yeah, that might work, but it may not necessarily bring the same value. If I say, no, we're actually going to do this in an agreement, we're going to put this together, the value is perceived to be different. So,
right. Reminds me of the, like, that we really, this really gets very interesting and very complicated very, very fast. Let's go to a very common business transaction, a merger or an acquisition.
Okay.
How are you going to measure the success of an acquisition? Is it the sales acquisition of the company you bought? Is it your combined sales? Is it an idea you got in a staff meeting with one of their engineers that never would have hit your team's radar, that builds a new product, that builds a new subsidiary? I mean, we never measure that.
Or is it taking out competition that potentially could have put you out of business? Like, right. You know, those that happens too.
Right. And that's just, I used to sit in the crucible of M&A transactions at the hottest point of the, you know, dot-com era. It's late 90s, sitting in Cisco. We did, 1 year we did 23 acquisitions. 23 acquisitions. Now, these are not massive thousands of employees. They're maybe, 400, 500, 1,000 was the biggest one we did, but usually they're 50 to 100 people still. I mean, it's very, very turbulent. But we used to sit there and have to prepare slides for the business development team to go to the board to show success rate of deals. And they're just like, it's just like the FTE, revenue per FTE. Really? We've got 700 contractors. That's not part of the number that you're measuring for revenue FTE? Because no, you're not measuring revenue per, independent contractor.
Yeah.
How do you measure an idea you got from somebody that you brought in, even if they leave? You know, is it turnover of the people you acquired? Is that one? That was one of the ones they measured. I'm like, this is so flawed.
I use this a lot. The market decides, right? The market always decides what something's worth, right? The market is, if you're a direct-to-consumer brand, the consumer decides whether or not your company wins or loses, right? Now, I do believe, and you and I have talked about this, you can have a great consumer-facing brand, and we're in the time right now, whereas if you don't have a great employee-facing brand or internal culture, you potentially could lose out. And I think, and you and I have agreed, we're going to see some companies that, to the public, everybody loves this company. This company is not gonna make it because they chose not to embrace what's here, what's now in the future of work. And I think we have to do that as consumers. So this original question that came in was, hey, is this right? Is this right that this person who's dancing making $17 million, is it right that they're getting paid $17 million when this person at the CEO? I will preface, not right or wrong. This person does work at an educational institution, so that does lean more towards the corporate side of things, right? You don't have to go get a degree to be a TikTok dancer, right? I mean, maybe you went and got a degree in dancing and performing arts, and maybe that's the case. But I also find it really interesting that a lot of people, I don't know, have picked up on yet, but Will Smith has gotten into the content creation game and used his team of in-house editors, and he's creating some wild content, very short form, on Instagram, on TikTok, on these places. So if there wasn't value there, then actually this ties into our article. I've seen people predicting here in the last 2 months that Hollywood in 15 years will no longer exist. Because
I don't have a hard time believing that. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't. And let me interject here is something that's sort of percolating as you're talking about this, Shane, and that is right back to the first comment we got started in this conversation, which is, how is it that a TikToker is making $17 million, or TikTokers are making that kind of money more than CEOs? And what that mean, and what can we draw from that? First, from the standpoint of, what does the CEO think of that, or CEO compensation and so forth? But here's an interesting thing. The consumer today, if you really think about it, and I agree with you, like at the end of the day, it's about, our consumer is going to value, purchase, spend time. The consumer today is eyeballs. That's really what it is, attention. It is someone's giving you their time, okay? And so when someone on TikTok is able to get millions of eyeballs, they're learning something really, really important. What gets the eyeballs to stay on me? And that is so powerful. And the reason that TikTok is going to like be less sexy is because they're going to steal the eyeballs. They're going to start showing you more commercials. You're going to be a little ticked off about the commercials. Then you're going to go chase to some other platform because they're just starting off and they're paying the influencers more money and there's no commercials. And that's how it goes. Same with Netflix raised their price this week. Oh, am I going to pay $20 a month to have my whole family watch free movies? Yes, I am. Yes, I am, because that's the price of one ticket in a movie theater.
Value exceeds price by $1. Right. It exceeds the price.
But that is so powerful. If you take a look at every creator right now on all the social platforms, there's a lot of people learning about how to get the eyeballs to come and to stay. And that is more important, I think, or as important as anything a CEO could be doing in these big, huge Goliath companies. That's a skill.
So now I'm going to flip this. because there's a couple different ways I actually want to go this. One, right? The TV's dead. The TV is dead. Traditional TV as we know it, it's still not main. Now. It's not mainstream, right? Mm-hmm. This is the new TV, right? Right. This is the new TV. This is where our attention is.
Yeah.
Right. So content created is for that, right? Now, what you just hit on, let's assume for a minute that how can the corporate world leverage, and I'm talking about corporate, I'm talking about a person in a job as a manager, as wherever, right? And I've hit on this, you've hit on this. I think we've talked about this from even a cultural standpoint.
Right.
How can corporate world learn? Like that's, to me, that's the more important article. If there's someone out here who writes for one of these publications and you want a really cool article, write, and Steve would be more than happy to have conversations with you about that. But what can corporate America learn from the TikTok dancer making $17 million? That is more important. Meaning, if you're at a job and you're stuck in your career and you're stuck, like you can't get past this income threshold, find something that you are uber passionate about and start doing your own videos, start doing a podcast about it, and it will scare you how quickly it opens up opportunities. But the reason that that typically doesn't happen, once you get past the people who won't do it because of fear, they won't do it because of traditionalism. They won't do it because, well, that's not professional. That's not how, you know, that's not how we do, you know, bankers, we shouldn't be on there talking. We shouldn't be talking. I have an insurance company. I shouldn't be talking. I'm an executive over here. I shouldn't be putting myself out there. It's really just fear of judgment. It's not actually you shouldn't be doing it, because what would happen is you would create a brand in your ecosystem. Meaning, I'm going to give some sideways advice here. Let's assume you were a career counselor at a university. Let's assume you all of a sudden started creating videos and interviewing people like Steve, people like these students who are coming and doing this. And then you decided, I've got so many followers, you may not even have to go look for it, because another university paying a lot more money may actually come to you and say, hey, you clearly know what you're doing, and we need your brand at our university to help our kids get it. We need your platform. So we're going to pay you an absorbent amount of money, something that you could have never wrapped your head around, so you could come do that. That's actually how you embrace that. That's how you leverage that.
Yeah. And how far do you think we are from people starting to recognize that at scale?
I think people recognize it. I think it's the fear. I think fear, like just like getting this, like the biggest phobia in the world is public speaking. Mm-hmm. That fear of the judgment. It's the fear of the judgment. I mean, you and I've talked about it a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't have it. To my chagrin, as they say, it's hurt me. I'm sure I live in a very conservative world here in Kentucky where, you know, being, you know, who you are and openly, you know, going against the traditional ways of how things have done. Mm-hmm. is typically met with pushback or negativity, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think we, like, don't be romantic about, this is one of the good things about Silicon Valley. It's not about your uniform and let's all come in wearing shirts that match and let's all make sure you got a shirt and tie. And no, be yourself, bring who you are. We hired you. We want you to be who you are. And I think a lot of it is this fear of this judgment of somebody's going to judge me. Somebody's going to judge me. And that's going to hurt my feelings, and that's going to assault my confidence, because my confidence, how I perceive in the world, my confidence is dependent on what other people think of me rather than something internally. And it gets into a whole nother realm of things. But I think my opinion is that is the biggest detractor for the success in doing it.
Yeah. Well, the good side, or the good part of this whole thing is also something we talked a lot about, which is in dire times is the greatest time for people to try new stuff. And they're pushed to uncomfortable places. That's when you're going to start to experiment with new things. Companies, people, leaders, individuals. We're starting to see more people, I think, have more than just one job. You know, people starting to build a patchwork of things together. I was joking earlier and I mentioned it. You know, I've got a son. He's 14. His 15th birthday is coming up. He's a twin. And he's been working in the sandwich shop for about a year now, one day a week, sometimes more, sometimes less. Mm-hmm. And he's earned a few $1,000s and he's asked me to open an account because it's called a custodial account on Schwab. And I've become his little investor, you know, guy that he's texting me.
Yep.
He just texted me, probably a few months ago, I'd like to get into crypto, Dad. And can you open a Coinbase account? And I'm going to tell you what to buy from me. You know, whether it's Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dogecoin, whatever these things are. And I'm like, I don't really know these things very well. And he goes, well, what do you think of this? What do you think? I was like, hey, you're asking the wrong guy. I said, but it's not a lot of money. It's going to be a good learning experience. You know, let's do some research and see what you think. And then we'll give it a try. So meanwhile, he's got me opening up a Coinbase account, opening up a Schwab account. He's also researched on Craigslist that there's not a lot of dog walkers. So he's put himself out for dog walking. He got one taker and then they ghosted him. And then I said, hey, I got an idea. I said, every man that I know on the planet Earth likes to power wash. How about if I get a power washer? And this summer we get a little trailer for your bike and you go advertise power wash people's driveways or decks, things like that. And 2 days, he's like, oh yeah, I love power washing. 2 days later, he comes back. He goes, I researched gas power washers illegal in our town, Dad. Can't do it.
I love this kid, by the way. Yes.
So he's thought about that. And then I was thinking, well, we could get an electric one, a high powered electric one. You can still, that's the one I've used. I always like the gas ones because they're more fun because you get higher PSI. But he's looking at all these and he's trying and he's experimenting and, you know, just curious, you know, and that,
yes,
that to me is the core of, you know, at a economy that's so digital right now. And most of us are digital immigrants. I'm a total digital immigrant. You know, the buyer is on the phone buying whatever it is you're selling. If you don't know how to present yourself on a phone, you're in a disadvantage. So go find someone, you know, out there who can help raise your game with that, because that is the future right now. And all these big companies that don't know how to do it, they're losing. They're losing share.
He's showing you his learning velocity, though.
That's right.
Like, and out of all your kids, he may not be performing the best academically than the other ones, but he's showing the ability that if he enjoys or has interest in something, he can learn it at a much quicker rate or learn, you know, or do it. Like, and that's what he's showing you. And that's what we talk about, not to put your kid at the center of it, but
right,
that's what we're talking about. It's, you know, I used to tell my team, like, I know what's wrong in this business. There's nothing you can bring to me that I'm not aware that we got to fix. We got to like,
that's a long list.
Yeah. Don't bring me problems. Bring me solutions. Be a problem fixer, not a problem finder. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference. Problem finders, those have their place, but bring me someone who can spot, who can find it and fix it. Like, bring me somebody who knows how to be, you know, what's the knife, like the Swiss Army knife, right? Army knife. Show me somebody who
people
can be
don't
a
know
Swiss.
When you say Swiss Army knife,
that's why I was trying. I was trying to figure of a different way in case
of tool.
Yes, yeah. What's it? The other one. What's it called? The other one's called. There's like a tool version of it where it's like,
I know what pliers. It is. You can turn it in different directions.
I can't think of what it is that you'll probably know. Anyway, if you don't know what a Swiss Army knife is, look it up. A Swiss Army knife. It's an army knife that has everything from a can opener to a fingernail to scissors to a wrench, everything, right?
Toothpick. Yeah.
Everything. Yeah. Everything.
Yeah.
This is something where the people who are that and that show multi-prong ability to to do different things,
mm-hmm.
circling it back to the future of work, those are the people that are going to have job security, whether they know it or not. Those mm-hmm. are the people. I am that way. I'll put myself in that box where if something is of interest to me, I can learn it. I'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I also went to school and I graduated 154th out of 187 with a 1.7 GPA. I got an F in foods, but before we came on here, I'm telling you how I was prepping a pasta bolognese from scratch and I can do these things. It's not about the class. It's that platform doesn't work for me to absorb it. Just let me go after what I like and I'll create you something really awesome. And that for me is what your son's showing. He's showing you his learning velocity. You know that. I mean, you see, mm-hmm. we talked about it when I was there.
And it's interesting, Shane, you know, if we take another approach on this whole conversation, really, you know, the world's in transition. People are thinking about work differently. Consumers are behaving differently. People are buying things in different places and have different needs, and all that's always going to continue to be in flux. I recently was asked by two founders of a company to join, helping them, you know, think through their strategy, and I got so excited, I decided to actually invest in this company. And here, the whole pathway to this thing is just, to me, it's a beautiful story about how cool the economy is and how we can tie strings together and use skills from different areas in different ways, but also it's about the learning and being curious and so forth. So two game developers who both had sold companies independently got to know each other, and they both had very successful exits, realized something when they were, you know, comparing notes one day, that when you're designing a game, really what you're trying to do is understand human behavior.
Mm-hmm.
How long is someone going to stay in my game? Why do they stop playing my game? Why are they playing this part of the game and not this part of the game? And where do I see, you know, them leaving the game? And I'm mm-hmm. learning things about their behavior so that I can tweak my game. Mm-hmm. And that's the cool part of games that have gone online, is that it's no longer, here's a disc, you know, hope it all works out. It's now about, we release the game, you play it, we tweak it while you're playing it, and we make it better, and we know what's working, what's not working. Well, what these two guys figured out, and the company's still in early phases, but it's called Skillprint, and what they realized, they had something golden, which was they believe through gameplay they're going to be able to surface career insights for people. And so, and this was probably about a year ago, I'm like, oh my God, this is so great. I mean, you can show by how someone plays a game that, you know, whether they take risks or they don't take risks, or they like to play with other people or they don't like to play with people, that these pathways could be statistically significant to, hey, maybe I want to explore a career in these kinds of things, because people that play games like you tend to be doing these kinds of things.
Yep.
Well, then the pandemic hits, and some of the companies that were doing testing on the product said, hey, can you build us games so that we can learn how our teams are behaving and have multiplayer games so that there can be learning insights from teams, not just individuals serving career insights? And then we're like, whoa, we've got a whole nother potential revenue stream. And that's why we both love the entrepreneur community, because you think you've got an MVP, minimum viable product, you put it out there, and all of a sudden the consumer sees something you never saw. And that's the beauty of the sort of the trial and error framework. And I think that's, you know, where we stand right now is the people who can really, and I know it's cliche, but, you know, the fail fast, that's why we're all entrepreneurs. We all are learning things every day and tweaking. And the people that get on the right platform at the right time and have the courage to put themselves out there and get in front of learning how to get eyeballs and attention have a massive advantage.
Yep.
In the economy right now. Massive.
And just be like the curiosity. I think curiosity, I don't know how to quantify curiosity, may be the most sought after power skill in the next 20 years. Mm-hmm. Someone who's willing and who has a curiosity to connect the dots, like a dot mm-hmm. connector, a solutionist, someone who's willing to do that. Someone who can have a conversation. I had a conversation with one of your old coworkers and friends, and they're in a company, and then I have an interaction in Portugal about some stuff. And I was like, oh, I think you need to know about this because I just came across this. But it's having that quick recall to be able to say, I'm curious. So I heard about something I was curious about. I found it really interesting. Something happened that resurfaced that curiosity in a real world use case that you may or may not be aware. Mm-hmm. Hey, you might want to look at this because this is probably some low hanging fruit revenue here for you.
Yeah.
And that's for me, people who can find those problems, people who can look at things like one thing I will say about you and I working together, you have never, ever expressed frustration anytime I've ever pointed out something that maybe could be done a different way or some. And I don't know if that's naturally inherently in you or if that's something you learned from your time or both, but you've never, not that I've ever been concerned about that being the case, but it's noticeable because a lot of people are, I don't want to say stuck in their ways, but they're romantic. They're romantic to know this is how I've done it. Even to how we do invoices or different things. You're like, no, I'm open. Like if you think it's a, like you tell me, you know, and it's being willing to, it goes back. I guess the word actually is the experimentation of what you've talked about going into 2022 in the future of work and experimentation being a huge bar of whether or not also your company, whether or not your company is actually going to figure it out. And if you're going to make this harder on yourself than it needs to be, and it's willing to experiment, willing to try new things. Like it's
And that's the huge advantage that an independent TikToker making lots of money has over someone who has shareholders, employees, the press, investors, boards of directors. There's more at stake for taking a risk, and there's less forgiveness for getting something wrong. I mean, look at the Dallas Cowboys. So I'm sitting here all puffed out because when we're recording this, my Niners won. And it was a blowout that turned into, oh my God, we just barely won that game. And the momentum shifted. It was just a good life in a bottle. Just such a great story of, you know, never, it's never over, man. You got to step on the, you know, the throat of your opponent until it's over. Well, so now everyone's armchair quarterbacking the coach. Like, and now it's like, oh, you're out. You know, what were you thinking calling a play when there's hardly any time left, a run at the middle and you have no timeouts left? And everyone is second guessing. And this guy, you know, what is the average shelf life of a coach in the NFL right now?
Oh, like it's
3 years. And I don't know what you need to draw a big pension for the rest of your life. But that's what I do know, a bunch of college coaches, and the college coaches are just waiting for that moment to get to the NFL because the pension in the NFL is just so rich compared to staying in college. But man, you just don't last long. You know, ask Nick Saban, he tasted it. He's like, no, going back to college. Thank you very much. It's very unforgiving. And that's why, you know, you got to find, we've put a lot of allure and we've put CEOs up on a pedestal. And I don't know, man, I've been sitting next to CEOs. Let me tell you, it's lonely. I had one CEO tell me one time, I talk to you more than I can share stuff with you. I can't share with my board and I can't share with my wife. I'm sharing more stuff with you than I can with them. And I was like, whoa, dude, I don't want your life. I feel bad for you. You know, like that's long. And I felt like I was a good support, but I was like, wow, I didn't think about it that way. Like, and then he said something, which I never heard anyone say. This is another company win. And we were in a difficult spot. We were having a stock option backdating self-investigation because we thought we'd seen other companies that were getting in trouble. This is like the early 2000s. So we do our own investigation and their fact pattern is not good. Like every time the stock went down, we granted more shares and all the companies that were getting in trouble were like, you're gaming the system. And we're like, yeah, because we're trying to make our employees richer. What the FTC and SEC thought was happening was you were trying to line the pockets of your executives, not your employees. So we had to restate earnings. Our share price took a hit and, the guy I was working with decided I'm going to retire like a few months after that. And he was like one of the best guys I've ever worked with. I was like, why? You know, why? He goes, let me tell you something. When you're a CEO, things go wrong. There is no jury of your peers. Mm-mm. You get in front of a jury, You think those people have respect and empathy for a CEO? Mm-mm. Nope. Guilty. Yep. Right. And so he's like, he goes, this was close. He goes, I knew we didn't do anything wrong, but I don't think I want that stress in my life anymore. I was like, man, I get it. I get it. Yep.
It's really interesting that you say that, because just recently there was an article posted, and this would probably be good for another episode to dive in. And it's called, I interviewed more than 500 powerful people from CEOs to cult leaders. Here's why second in command is better. And it talks it talks about that. I'll send it to you. But on the other case, is it safe to say, and maybe your opinion is different, is it safe to say that a Fortune 500 CEO, while they may not be in the office working every day, you're kind of on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Like, it's an all day, every day.
You never have an off the cuff conversation. Okay. Every email you ever write to anyone for even, you know, hey, how come my kid's not starting at shortstop on the little league team is going to get out in the public. So you have to be on your game 24/7. Yes.
So I just did the math real quick based off of the averages. So the average employee makes $75 a minute. Okay. Based off of not average employee.
Oh, this CEO. Is interesting. I know exactly where you're going.
Okay. Yes. So in this same YouTube's earning report, it has their earnings for 2021 and then their earnings per minute. Okay. So the earnings per minute, now I'm assuming this is going off of per minute of views, is my guess.
Okay.
So it's still somewhat relative. It's still what they're doing, right? The top one made $56 per minute, even though he made $29.5 million. He made $56 per minute of views. Okay. Next one was 45. The next one was 26. Then it was 23. And then 20 was kind of the consistent number kind of going down through that. So in what you also don't see is, I would challenge anyone who looks at, so Mr. Beast, for example, he has all of his old videos still up. Okay.
On YouTube.
Yes. On YouTube. So if we go to Mr. Beast, and the reason I know this is because I saw another creator do something, interviewed him right when he became popular, and he was spending more money than he was making in the first couple years. Okay. Wait a second. That doesn't sound completely lucrative, right? That doesn't sound glamorous. Mm-hmm. That sounds like somebody as an entrepreneur trying to build a business, right? I spent way more money on my time for 4.5 years. I actually didn't take a salary at all, reinvesting into a business and growing a business. So I understand that. So if I go to the oldest video, he started making Minecraft videos as a kid and posting them 9 years ago. So I don't, like, let's not be overly consumed with the fact that this guy's making $32 million here. He wasn't making that when he started 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. A lot of these CEOs may not have been making what they're making now when they started 9 years ago.
Right.
Some of them will have, some of them maybe not, but you know, there's some comparisons when we look at this again, when you start looking at how long somebody did something, when they did it, it just takes you down a rabbit hole that what's somebody willing to provide value for? What are they willing to pay for? And then the market will decide. And if you want a taste of the creator economy, it is a gold rush. If you want to dive in and let us know if you want to be a guest, and we can talk about how you can start and you can create and how you can use that in your corporate.
Even on TikTok, Shane, you know, I spend, I don't know, I probably spend maybe half hour to an hour watching TikToks a day.
Yep.
Okay. Maybe there's unbelievably good content there about how to cook, how to make a better TikTok, all the metrics of, you know, what you and I talked about this, like we take a look at, What times do posting a certain times a day matter? Do length of videos matter? Do the titles, hashtags, words you use matter? Well, like I mean, I've been on it for a year and a half. I still have hundreds more experiments I want to run to learn. But it's so interesting to me, right? And, you know, what do you dress? What are you wearing? What are you not wearing? What's the lighting like? Do you use music? Do you not use music? Do you use the hot music? I mean, there's some people on TikTok who say, if you use the hottest music today and you don't say anything, you're going to get 500,000 views.
Correct.
And it's just all. So, I mean, the information's out there. And you're the one that told me that, you know, who is it? Gary Vee? What did Gary Vee say about putting your content out there?
Yeah,
it's like, most people are not going to read it. They're not going to. They're not going to follow it. The gold is there. The question is, do you have the will?
Consistency?
Yeah,
and the consistencies.
Right.
So I scroll back. Within his first 25 videos, he posts a video that says, "Thanks for my 300 subscribers." 4, 5, 6, 7 videos after that. If this video, his title is of the video, is this video gets 1 million views and it's only 46 seconds long. So what has he done? I don't know how old he is now. Let's say he's 30. He was 22, but he's not 30. So let's say he's 27. He was 19, 17, 16, whatever. He's already running experiments. Wait a second. That next video, 50,000 video views, epic sauce. Thank you for all the views. 50,000 videos. Six or three videos later, he posts a video of one of the old school content creators on YouTube, and the title of the video is "How much does PewDiePie make?" He was already, wheels were churning. He's like, that's why this kid, like, he's not a kid, he's a grown man. That's why this man got to where he's at, because he has something in him that allows him to see opportunity. Mm-hmm. Don't get caught up in this. He's young and he's creating dumb videos and whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would argue it's better than most things your kids are going to watch on TV.
Yeah.
And what can they learn? So use this to learn from it, right? Use this. It's the same way with the Mark Rober guy who used to be a NASA scientist. And now he does these informational videos for kids, and he does like one once a month, and it's a really big to do and puts on these big elaborate science experiments. And he talks about why he left NASA. He's got a son who's autistic. He wanted to be home more. This gave him an outlet. This allowed him to have a different way of life. And we got to look at all, like, before we get overly romantic and create a villain out of something that shouldn't be creative villain, let's actually see what happened. And it's no different, right? Tim Cook, Steve Jobs. Yeah. They get criticism for making all this money and doing all this. They spent hours and years and months grinding it out, not making it scared, like taking chances. You can say what you want to about Elon Musk. He bet on himself. He made a whole bunch of money and doubled down again, and he bet on himself.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't handed any money.
It's interesting. You know, if you take a look at those two big, very big profile, one way bigger than the other in terms of persona, Elon Musk and Tim Cook. And I've passed Tim Cook in the local, you know, shopping mall. Dude, he is small. He's really like way shorter than you. He's this guy bigger than life. You pass, like, that's why I walked by him. Like, I didn't even know that was Tim Cook. Someone's like, "Hey, that's Tim Cook." I'm like, whoa. But here's the interesting thing. Do you think Elon Musk is spending a lot of time thinking about how do I get the eyeballs and the minds and the hearts of my employees?
No.
I think he's 100% focused on the outside market and the future. The future, almost, I don't care what the customer, like, there's companies that are consumer oriented and there's customers that are design oriented. I think he's design oriented. Like, I'm going to build it. The market's going to come to me. A lot of fashion companies are like, "What's hot? What's hot? Let's build it." And they're following.
Very much like Steve Jobs was. Steve Jobs knew what he wanted to focus on, knew what he wanted to build. Yeah.
Tim Cook, I would argue, is like, okay, I was number two for a while. I got my own ways. I think I want to run this. But I think he realizes that I got people that are going to figure out how to get the eyeballs of my company. I need to get the hearts and mind of my people and the right team around me so that we can get the best out of what we can get out of. And, you know, I don't know his mettle as a leader. I honestly don't know, but I respect him because he doesn't need to have the spotlight.
Yep.
You know, he doesn't seem to. He doesn't seem like he's like, oh, loving, you know, having an interview the same way that an Elon does. But that's the hard part, I think, of the CEOs that people don't understand. Like, you got more problems than you even can begin to write down on a in a notebook, complete notebook, things you're worried about. And at some point, you know, I want to revisit a conversation you and I had off air around coaches on the big stage. Mm-hmm. And what probably people are like, oh, that guy should have won the big game. Yeah, but you know, the hundreds of things that they're thinking about that you have no idea is on their brain, which is super interesting because it is really, really hard. And so you could look at it and say, look at the money, you know, I don't have any, you know, empathy for their problems. They're getting paid more than they should be. Well, that's one way of looking at it, but it's a much more complex web, I think, to weave in these big, you know, with egos and people and some, you know, some key players' spouse is ill or they're ill. And, you know, you can't tell the shareholders that because they could short the stuff. So you got all kinds of stuff that you're juggling, you know?
100%. You and I would both agree that having multiple teenagers in the household raising them can be pretty stressful at times, mm-hmm. right? It ebbs and flows, right? So imagine being a college football coach. You have all your assistant coaches you got to keep up with. You got all the people at the university you got to keep up with and make them happy. And then you got 125 athletes out there who are all dealing with breakup of a boyfriend or girlfriend, parent in a home has gotten sick, friend suicidal, one of them is suicidal, somebody just beat them up, somebody just stole something from. And this is happening every day, all day.
Yeah.
Right? I had a very, very close friend of mine. He's come out and talked to, I won't say his name. He's a college basketball coach. We were very, very close friends. One day he calls me, and this got us to be very, very close. He calls me and he just explains to me what's going on in his life. And he had been so focused on the work that he was on the road and he was taking Adderall, but he wasn't taking Adderall illegally. What he was doing was because he didn't want to come off the road from recruiting and take time away from his job. He was making copies of the prescription and just rewriting when he needed a refill, and it got him jammed up. And what ensued after that of him being very, he still coaches and he's actually a head coach somewhere now. And it's a public story, not crazy public, but in what he went through, most people would have no idea. And I remember people criticizing him. Oh, he's had it easy. He's, you know, he worked here and then he worked here for this person. I'm thinking, you have no idea the pressure that what goes on. And, you know, I think we say that with all of this and kind of wrapping it up. Mm-hmm. We also can't assume that the person that's making $17 million dancing is uber happy and they love their life and they're just thrilled with what they're doing.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and we can't assume that like the success, ultimately, I think when we get to a place, and I had a conversation with somebody today about, you know, when you realize you have a bias towards something, meaning when you constantly, this topic is calling you to dive in, I explain to them what I do. And I actually try to prove my bias wrong. So I'm like, okay, wait a second. Let me actually see if this is actually true. Maybe I keep saying this is wrong. Let me actually go try and prove it. Mm-hmm. Right. So when you can learn to feel those biases, meaning if I look at someone else and I see, because essentially what we're saying, if we're questioning, and I'm not saying the person that wrote in is questioning that, but when we see somebody making $17 million TikToking, I think sometimes it comes from a judgmental place of they're not earning it. Are they earning it? Right? So rather than say that, say, wait a second, what's happening in the market?
That's
what's
right.
happening in the world?
That's healthy.
And where am I missing out on this? Maybe it's not making TikTok videos. Maybe it's making YouTube videos about parenting or the life that you've been through or whatever that can be valuable that you perceive to be more valuable to everybody else. And it might surprise you.
Yeah. I think you're hitting on a couple of things that I want to call one of them out. And then I want to close on one and then tee it up for a future episode. Your generational differences is really powerful. And a lot of the work that I've done has revealed that the older generations, they cast aspersions to the younger generations because they're jealous. They're jealous because they're not having to pay their dues the same way that they had to. Right. And it's pretty interesting, right? It's like, why are you pissed off at that person? Well, they think they should be promoted tomorrow. What did you think you should be promoted? Yeah. But I never asked for it like they're asking for it. Okay, well, don't begrudge them for acting on something that you wanted. It's just a different psychology. But the other meta point I think that we're landing on here is something that I'm happy we're talking about, because we need to talk about it, and that is mental wellness, mental health, the unbelievable strain that comes with the world today when you can live a life where you never turn it off. And you've got a story there, and you've shared the story on this show and on other episodes around, you know, many of us have found us in that spot where, you know, we were, whether we're overachievers, whether we're, you know, hyper, you know, wanting to be successful, whatever it is, we find ourselves in that place. And there is a much easier, you know, a slippery slope. The slope is a lot more slippery today to fall into, and pretty soon, you know, you're fried, anxious, burnt out, depressed, and miserable. And that's not helping anybody. And we're not good at diagnosing it. We're not good at identifying it, but we all know it's happening. And that's where we landed in this conversation. You know, how hard that is for a lot of people, whether it's addicted to, you know, Adderall or painkillers or what have you. That stuff is so much more easily accessible now. And I think the meta, you know, issue is that I think the pandemic has helped surface is, man, we are really bad at identifying this stuff and putting guardrails for people so that in that work with us or who are in our family, so that people don't run off the rails.
Yeah.
And we don't know what that looks like yet. So we got a lot of work to do, but I got a couple of people in mind for us to bring on the show
to
help us, you know, guide the conversation there.
Yeah. And you know, so it really goes back in summary from just a regular guy on the internet. Before we wonder why, if we constantly find ourselves trying to figure out why someone's doing something and, you know, how they're doing it, first make sure that you're not doing it out of place of jealousy or a place of FOMO, fear of missing out, and those things. And if you're not, challenge yourself, and I'm giving you some entrepreneurial insight, sit down and make a list about the things about what they're doing finds interesting, because believe it or not, even trying to understand how they make money, there's a website called socialblade.com where you can go and put anyone's URL to their YouTube page, and it knows the algorithms of how people get paid, and it pulls all the data and the views and all that. Cool, and it shows you a range of what they're, so there's probably a market. And I would argue moving forward, there's a lot of advertisers, companies spending money on these platforms that would love to find somebody who knows how to find the best place for value. And that may be a place where you can start and take that into a career of, I didn't think it was right there making $17 million, but actually what I found was, this is actually really cool information. I was able to find this information and that information. And Best Buy is wanting to get into this market of influencers and having different, you know, things on there. So I'm actually going to go to them because I think they, if they spent their money in this way, they could get, like, that's how we take that curiosity to a positive place and not to a negative place. So just dropping some jewels.
And that's another episode we should put in the queue, which is, I got a whole bunch of, you know, ideas and thoughts. Some of them were in Workquake around, you know, you want to learn something different, you can do it while you're doing your job. Like, there's all kinds of ways to, you know, experiment, volunteer, you know, do internships and things like that. But yeah, good episode. Absolutely, man. They're, like, we covered a lot of ground. We wandered a lot like we usually do, but I think we covered some good territory.
Yeah, I think it was a good conversation that most people have sitting around the office or sitting around, you know, after hours having a drink. And I'm glad we're able to bring that. So that's a wrap on this one. And I'm Shane Howard with my good friend
Steve Cadigan.
And we'll see you later.